You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
And we're going to talk about the one team that could have ended the joy of the Chicago Cubs.
And we are friends with fantasy benefits.
Me, you, and Mike are all on the same page. People might be a little bit worried about the move to Cleveland from Toronto, you know, being a worse offensive park, but you shouldn't be.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
I got to draw the line somewhere, but okay. I not drawing it anywhere in baseball. Hit me up and let's talk turkey.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome into the Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. I'll be your host today, Evan Peterson, and we're going to talk about the one team that could have ended the joy of the Chicago Cubs.
Man.
That's the Cleveland Indians, in case you've been living under a rock, and that's Matt Thompson, in case you've also been residing there. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Hectic day today. Got out of work a little bit late. Had to go to the car dealership. That's never fun stuff. Got my car off and was waiting on word, like a nervous father hoping not to spend too much money on that thing.
They're gonna wrench every single penny out of you. But it's not like I work at a car dealership or anything like that. I had to watch. Well, not had to. I got to watch my 5-year-old play basketball, which was probably about as frustrating as getting your car looked at. So.
Yeah, no arguments, yeah.
Well, somebody who played a little bit better than 5-year-olds playing basketball was the Cleveland Indians, who did take runner-up in the World Series last year, and they have a fantastic offense. I'm excited. Let's just dive right in, and we'll start at a guy who actually, received some time at the top of the lineup, Mr. Carlos Santana. Do you expect him to hit there this year, and what do you expect from this perennial OBP monster?
Just that, man. He's one of the most consistent players in baseball in regard to that base percentage statistic. I mean, he's consistently in the 350 borderline 360 area, and he's definitely an asset there. It's unconventional, to say the least. A big lumbering guy like that occupying the leadoff spot for a team for that long. But Cleveland is kind of a weird team. They didn't really have a pure leadoff guy, and Terry Francona is just out of the box enough to try this. So, I mean, it's a pretty good move. You worry about the interleague games now with Santana and Encarnacion, because one of them has to sit. And obviously it's probably going to be Santana, or probably both of them at certain times, but that's only a handful of games a year, so you can't really worry about that too much. That's really the only downside. The contact percentage with Santana is never going to be super strong, but it was better last year than almost any year in his career. Obviously, the solid walk percentage is there. Hard contact was almost a career high last year too. He's not a really good line drive hitter, which is kind of weird. But the average and power combined with the patience is a really high floor for fantasy purposes. And I mean, combining first baseman and DH, I have Santana on my personal list as the 12th best first baseman going forward for this year. So I'm pretty bullish on Santana.
I think it's going to be an interesting exercise to see how his numbers go if he spends, you know, the entire year in the leadoff spot. Do you know that he had the most RBI of his career last year when he was seeing the good chunk of time at the top of the lineup, which I thought was kind of weird?
That's interesting to know. I mean, that goes a lot to what I think about this lineup. It's deep, you know what I mean? The emergence of guys like Tyler Naquin, who we'll talk about later, at the end of the lineup makes it a hell of a lot longer. So,
yeah, and I mean, we've gone on, and it's pretty much the first thing you learn about in fantasy baseball is draft Carlos Santana in OBP leagues. But the batting average was here for him in 2016 for two big reasons. A third straight year with a rise in batting average against the shift, which is always a good thing as it's employed more and more these days. And partly because he was able to do better against right-handed pitching, where he had hit under 215 the previous 2 years, or 215 in 2015 and, like 210 back in 2014.
Yeah, it's worth noting. I mean, I like this player a lot. I always, you know, I love little quirky things like this, and he had 99 walks and 99 strikeouts last year. I mean, that's pretty cool. Obviously career best power numbers too, with 31 doubles, which was his highest that he's had in a while since 2013. The three triples, which is kind of weird because he's not a speed guy or anything like that. But and 34 homers. That's easily his career best. It beats his best of 27 that he set in 2014. And, yeah, a lot of that's because he had the highest at-bat total he's ever had in his career. But a lot of that's also because he stayed productive and stayed healthy. 158 games. Last year was 154. Year before that, 152. Then 154 before that. I mean, it's as rock solid and consistent as you're going to get. Pencil him in for 25 homers. 360 OB, 350, 360 OBP, and see where the rest of the chips fall. He's a pretty solid player.
Yeah. Well, another solid player that we alluded to a little bit in that conversation was Edwin Encarnacion, who comes over from Toronto. We had a show back in December. It was me, you, and Mike, where it was actually the show where he had signed. So we've talked a little bit about him, but if you want to reiterate those thoughts here, since it is the Indians preview.
No, I think you had the best stat of them all, where you said he led the major leagues in no doubt home runs. People might be worried about me, you, and Mike are all on the same page. People might be a little bit worried about the move to Cleveland from Toronto, you know, being a worse offensive park, but you shouldn't be. It's the lineup is better. The aforementioned Santana is better than any leadoff guy that Encarnacion's had batting in front of him in Toronto in the last 3-4 years, easily. OBP-wise, and the lineup itself with Kipnis probably hit second. Whoever hits second is going to be a nice bump. I mean, yeah, Toronto had a power guy hitting second, but it's a little different. I love the lineup construction here in Cleveland, and I think that's worth a little bit. I mean, yeah, I think the home runs take a little slight dive. I mean, it's really hard to project Encarnacion to not hit 30 home runs any way you slice it, though.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's another rock-solid, consistent guy. I mean, you think last year, 42 homers, year before that, 39. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up, you know, 37 homers, 265 average, 120 RBIs. I mean, you got to love that.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're going to steal all my stats, I'm going to borrow one from Werner, where he had said that, I believe it was since 2011, he's eclipsed $22 in roto value. So he's just been a consistently productive guy. I think it's a pretty lateral move. I'm thrilled if I get him in the second round. If he's going to fall back to the third round in like 12-team leagues, I'm snapping him up. That's all there is to it. I don't think he'll fall that far, but that's an area that I would just lose my mind if I got him there.
Yep. I mean, I have him as my number 5 first baseman, so I would surely take him there as well. I mean, the only guys I have better than him, Goldschmidt, Miggy, Rizzo, and Joey Votto, and that's debatable. Probably only Votto because I play – most of the leagues I play in are OBP leagues, so sometimes it's hard for me to drop that personal bias when I'm doing all the ranks like that because, I mean, Votto's an OBP monster. But, I mean, probably standard 5x5. I won't hate you if you have him in Encarnacion even as high as third, to be honest.
Nope. Well, let's talk about who we think is going to be batting second in this lineup here, Jason Kipnis, who I've always thought has been kind of a streaky Jekyll and Hyde player. But, I mean, he didn't have that season last year, really. He was pretty steady Eddie.
Yeah, man. He's very similar first and second half. I mean, more steals in the second half. which for him, yeah, he had 15 steals. Steals bounced back a little bit from the 12. I don't think we're going to see ever again the 22, 25, 30 steal seasons like he used to put up. I think those are gone, but that's okay. I mean, if he can stay on the field, you'll take that trade-off. He had his most at-bats he's had in the last five seasons last year. He hit lefties a little better in the second half for power, which is always nice. He always kind of his power kind of disappeared against same-siders and didn't have that issue this year. But again, the big thing for him is the durability, and he's going to contribute in every single category. And like, he's also another really steady Eddie player. This team's full of them. I have Kipnis as my 10th second baseman, and that might seem low, but the position is really deep. I mean, he's ahead of a guy directly, DJ LeMahieu, Ben Zobrist, Neil Walker. I have all behind Kipnis. I mean, I like Kipnis a lot, so I'm not opposed to Kipnis in and ended up with Kipnis on any of my teams either. I mean, I'm sure you feel the same.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about the lineup around him. I mean, there's going to be plenty of opportunities to put up counting stats. You talked about the steals. I don't think another 20-steal season is on the horizon for him. I'd kind of put that over-under at 15 and see what you think. But real quick, the one thing I wanted to hit on, if you're going to understand Jason Kipnis last year, you need to understand what he did with the hard-hit pulled ball. I was playing around on the Fangraphs Splits tool, which is one of my new favorite things to do when I get bored. And he had a .696 batting average on pulled balls that Fangraphs wow. classified as hard-hit, compared to the previous two seasons where that batting average was never above .550. So you're looking at a big tick up there. He was also putting them in the air at a 40% clip compared to his previous career high, which was 28%, and it accounted for 19 of his 23 home runs last year. So you look at that, and for a guy that's been all over the map as far as his batting average is concerned, mm-hmm. I don't know how I feel about that .275, even if it is basically his career average of .272. He's had seasons where he hit .284. He had one where he hit .303. I'm worried about a little bit of batting average regression here with Kipnis, but he finished the season really strong. You're looking at 19 doubles after August 1st compared to 22 in the other 4 months of the season. And I'm with where Jason Kipnis's draft price is.
That's good to know. I didn't know the bad ball profile was that that nice. I mean, that's something you can count on 20 homers if he stays healthy then, based on all that.
Yeah.
I think that raises him up for me a little bit. That's for sure.
It was a huge jump over, like I said, what he'd done previously. And so if he kind of struggles in that area, you're going to see the numbers kind of roll back a little bit. But he puts a jolt into it for sure. And definitely somebody that if you're getting him, I was trying to look real quick at where he was going in NFBC and my computer just froze. But you're looking probably top 75.
Yeah, I'm gonna pull it up. I'll pull it up right now for you. I know whatever it is, it's probably too low because he's kind of been labeled as an inconsistent guy. Even though, I mean, which is fair, but I think he's been better than that. He's going 95th overall. He's the 11th best second baseman off the board. 95 overall.
Crazy.
Yeah, I think that you're right. I think that's low. I think that's about 10 to 15 spots too low, to be honest. So yeah, I'm with you.
Mm-hmm. Well. Crazy, and I know this isn't a Red Sox show, but you have to explain to me how you have Francisco Lindor in front of Xander Bogaerts. Like, I love Lindor, but I don't see that by any stretch of the imagination.
Stolen bases.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, they're interchangeable. And, I mean, yes, I do have – I have Lindor third, and I have Bogaerts seventh, and I'm the low man on Bogaerts. Mm-hmm. Which is fine. I've always been the low man at Bogaerts. He's just kind of inconsistent, you know, and he all of a sudden he turned down the power and the average kind of disappeared. But last year was a very, very solid season. But before that, he was kind of inconsistent. I know he's still young and growing into it, but that's something I'll have to revisit. I mean, those ranks were old.
Oh, I know. I'm not trying to hold you over the fire, but it was just something I was shocked.
No, that's fair. I like a challenge like that. It's nice. But there's not much separation, that's for sure. The shortstop is deep, so... At the top, anyways.
Yeah, so talk to me about Lindor.
Yeah, well, my biggest scouting miss I've ever had as an analyst. I thought Lindor was an all-glove speed guy, and he's proven to be better than that, which is good for him. But So I always kind of wear that with regard to Lindor. So maybe I'm overcompensating for that now. Who knows? But I do think he's a strong batting average play. As much as you can predict batting average, I mean, I'd be willing to write a 300 average down him in stone, which is high praise considering, you know, there's not a lot of hitters like that now. He was very similar to last year. He had better walk percentage was up. But the power, and so if he stays healthy, in the opportunity, a little thing I'm worried about is I don't know how much running he's going to necessarily do now with I think there's 30 stolen base upside. I really do. Mm. But I don't know how much of that gets achieved with those big bats hitting after him now. You know what I mean? Mm. So that might be tampered. But Francona is aggressive. He doesn't strike out. He walks. Like I said, the 2% increase in his walk rate is a sizable difference when you're talking about a guy who had played in 158 games. What's another thing, too? I mean, last year he played 99 games in the majors, and he played 59 games in AAA. So he was up again at 158. He's consistently healthy. If he can do that again, that's very nice as well. I mean, you got to take the youth into account. A little bit of room for growth. He's 23 years old. And he will be 23 still on opening day. He'll play the whole season at 23, so he's an interesting profile. I am probably super aggressive on Lindor, compensating for probably my future or my past mistakes regarding his development. But you can't go wrong here. I don't think you can go wrong with Bogarts either, to be fair.
I echo everything you said on Lindor. The only thing that I need to update my NFBC list because I'm just slightly off, but the one I'm looking at has Lindor as a top 30 player, and I'm not sure that I'm quite in at that price. I would probably want him to slide down a little bit further. I get where he's at in comparison to like the shortstop pool for sure, but as far as within the top 300 and how I want to go about constructing my team, even though I love Lindor and I love the skill set, I'm probably going to own him on 0% of my teams, either because I jumped up and grabbed like a Corey Seager at the end of the second round, and Lindor, you know, just didn't make it in my plans in the third. I just don't see myself owning any shares of him, even though I do like him this year. If that makes sense.
No, I do, and I think a little bit that plays into that is, you know, I'm looking at the NFBC data now. There's six shortstops in the top 31 overall players, according to NFBC. Bogarts is 27 at 4. Lindor's 5 at 30. Trevor Story is number 6 at 31. Eduardo Nunez is number 7, and he's ranked 120. So I think he gets pushed up a little bit because the gap after him in the next tier is such a big drop-off. You know what I mean?
That's a great point.
Obviously, there's multi-position guys that are in there, like a Brett, like, I mean, like, names are skipping. Obviously, Trey Turner's going to go. He's not a shortstop eligible
now,
but he will be pretty quickly. Mm. He's going, obviously, higher than him. He's going like 12 or 13 overall, according to this information here. But I do think there's a lot going into that because it's perceived to be – and it's a big drop-off from Trevor Story, who they have 6, to Eduardo Nunez. That's a massive difference.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the reason why Lindor has a little more helium than he probably should.
Yep. Another guy that's getting a ton of helium this year is Jose Ramirez. I know he's a big Friends with Fantasy Benefits guy, creates a lot of conversation around here. So let me inaugurate me on Jose Ramirez.
I'm probably the wrong guy to inaugurate you because I still don't really buy it. I have him ranked 16th at third base, and believe it or not, I'm not the low man. Mike Warner has him lower than me. But I have him ranked 16th among third basemen. The high man is 14th, and that's Darius and Justin. So we all have kind of found a little sweet spot for him. But I'm not enamored with Jose Ramirez as the fantasy industry seems to be, which that doesn't mean anybody's right or wrong. It's just he seems to me – I mean, I don't have the numbers to back this up. He seems more of a – he got a little lucky with the batting average, so is what I'm looking at now. He was able to have the most at-bats in his career. He finally was able to settle in as a full-time player. He's only 24, which is younger than I thought.
Yep.
But again, he's only 24. First season with full-time at-bats. Yes, the stolen bases have always been there. 29, 25, 23, 22. Splitting time between the major leagues and minors the last 4 years, those are the stolen base totals. So those have always been there. The batting average, though, between the majors and minors last year, he hit 240. And or 2 years ago, he hit 240 in 2015. Now he's hitting 312. 265 before that, 240 again. So I think 312 kind of jumps out as the anomaly. But again, it's his first year with regular playing time, and so you really can't compare it to the other seasons. With that said, though, I mean, he's not going to get a super strong RBI opportunity. The runs is really completely dependent on where he's going to be hitting in the batting order. Right now, they have him hitting sixth. I would like maybe he's a guy that can emerge in the top of the order and move Santana down, which I wouldn't do that, but maybe it's more conventional. I'm not as aggressive. I think there is room for growth. I just don't like paying the price I'm going to have to pay for Ramirez when there's other third basemen around him that I'll wait a little bit on and still get some more production.
I agree. Yeah, I'm not going to jump on up for Ramirez. He had the 16th lowest hard hit rate in all of baseball last year, but he was definitely the most productive if you take a look at that list. And it was helped out by that batting average that you talked about, which now brings his career batting average to a 275. After he had the 312, and it's not like he has a ton of at-bats to, like, weigh down these numbers. He's only got about 1,000 at-bats at the major league level. He's more of a, kind of a spray and pray hitter who's got the wheels to steal, like, 15 to 20 bags, assuming the green light keeps up. He doesn't get shifted a ton, but he had a great year against shifted defenses. He batted .452 against the shift last year, compared to a .265 in 2015. So I think there's some definite areas for regression, and just looking at the names in that area, on the NFBC list, I mean, he's going in front of guys like, Michael Franco, Jake Lamb, you know, names that I'm not really comfortable.
Yeah, I'm with you. Longoria's there. A super value play for me at third base is Mike Moustakas, who's going literally 100 picks after Ramirez.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, I mean, I'll do that. I'll go that route. And
I mean, I guess if it's an OBP league, in which case you want to try and play Ramirez as a better play there, because Moustakas is pretty abysmal in OBP leagues. But in general, I'm with you there.
I don't play in points formats, but Ramirez seems like a good player in that format, too, because he doesn't strike out. He makes a lot of contact. He's going to score the runs. The RBIs are questionable, just depending on where he's going to hit. I don't think he's going to knock in 76 runs again this year. But, I mean, stranger things have happened. The thing that stands out to me, just checking his eyeball on the stat page, is the 46 doubles. I mean, that's an incredible number, especially when you consider his career high before that was 15 in AAA. His career high in the majors before he hit 46 last year was 14. 46 doubles is a lot. That points to maybe the power being a little bit more real. But, I mean, he's hit 11 home runs last year. I don't know if I feel comfortable projecting him for 15. And I definitely don't project him to hit 312 again. I would pencil him more in the 280, 14 homers, 25 steal range. That's a hell of a player, but that's one I think I can get that production a little bit later for where he's going.
Yeah, over the past 3 years, playing a little fun with leaderboards, Jose Ramirez has the 14th lowest strikeout rate in baseball. So, yeah, that's a pretty good batting profile to have, but without the power or the ability to steal, you know, 30 bags, I think he's going a little bit higher than need be in this third base pool. So, I mean, we can move on out to the outfield here.
I'm sorry, Evan. Go ahead. We did this last time, too. We forgot about the catchers. Are you any interest in any of those guys, in Yan Gomes or Roberto Perez?
No, I want to like Gomes, but
so do I.
The past couple of years have been just terrible for him. I think it was an MCL injury in 2015. And then last year he had the shoulder issue and then the wrist injury while he was rehabbing.
Yep.
Don't you think in hindsight the Indians would have liked to time travel back and close that deal for Jonathan Lucroy?
I think for all intents and purposes, they had the deal closed, and Lucroy's the one that said no, right?
Oh, that's right, yeah.
They didn't want him to pick up the option or something, which is ludicrous, because you're not going to trade for a guy like that and not pick the option up. So I don't blame the Indians at all.
Or wasn't Lucroy worried about, like, Gomes, like, how much the Indians, you know,
I think so, yeah.
Thought it was going to eat into his playing time or something like that?
Yeah, you must not have looked at Gomes' numbers the last couple of years. But, yeah. I mean, one thing, though, I think – I like Gomes, but I also like Roberto Perez. And I know they're both really stud defensive players, and they're both going to eat into each other's value. Like AL only, you know what I mean? Two catcher formats, they're both probably going to have some value because they're going to play so much, which also limits their value because they're splitting time. You know what I mean? So, like, it's a kind of a catching situation I want to avoid. Right. I just wanted to touch on it. That's all.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, we definitely rounded those bases, so we can't say we didn't get them all covered.
There you go.
The outfield, would you rather talk about Michael Brantley or Tyler Naquin? Because I think I would much rather talk Tyler Naquin.
We can do that. I mean, do you believe in the profile last year? I mean, I know the hard hit percentage is way up. I mean, strikeouts are a concern, but I mean, what's your thoughts on Naquin?
There's a lot to prove on his part.
Definitely is.
And before we even get into the bat, he's got to prove it defensively because his struggles were limelighted by a big stage known as the playoffs.
Yeah, he did. Yep, that was a trouble spot. And
yeah.
If he doesn't improve, there's a guy called Bradley Zimmer who's a plus defensive player who's banging the door down on AAA. I know the offensive numbers don't look great, but the floor is much higher with Zimmer's defense and speed. So Naquin's got some people reading over his shoulder, that's for sure.
Heard of him. And, I mean, a couple other things. The strikeout rate. It's crazy to me that he could strike out against righties 30% of the time and still hit 302 off of them. But, okay.
Yeah, it's
nuts. We'll roll with it. The BABIP, which is coming down, obviously. I mean, I want to be all in on Tyler Naquin, but there's just all these regression flags that are, I mean, he's not costing you anything in drafts is the best thing right now. So if you get in on him real, real late, but I think he's a guy that could catch a little buzz here as real drafts get fired up. And I just kind of want to see how high the price is going to go, especially if we get news that, you know, Brantley isn't ready to go for whatever reason and there's playing time for him.
Yeah. I have Naquin pegged as a huge regression candidate, and it's not because I don't like him. It was actually me and Mike talked about him on a prospect pod last year. It was interesting because we did it before the season, and we kind of how we said we both liked a little, liked the profile and stuff. But it was weird because all the scouting reports, you know, I mean, Naquin won back to back batting titles at the time in the Big 12 when Texas A&M was still in the Big 12 in college. So that's legit.
Yeah.
Back to back batting titles in the Big 12 was nothing to, you know, sneeze at or anything because that's really tough to do. But you look at, you know, then he's also looked at in those same scouting reports as a plus defensive outfielder. And we were talking about, you know, hey, maybe Zimmer's going to get the chance. But we're like, well, no, it's going to be Naquin because he's on the 40-man already. And it was. It was Naquin. And there's no way we predicted this. Like, I mean, we were ahead of the curve on Naquin getting a shot, but we didn't see this coming. I don't think the Indians did either, if they're being completely honest. I know Mike's way higher on Naquin than I am. He traded for him in our big 20-team Dynasty League. He gave up some considerable value to do that, which is fine. I'm just worried about the at-bats going forward because I think the playoffs, like you mentioned, left such a bad taste in people's mouth. I think if he comes out of the gate struggling this year, it could be a really quick hook to Zimmer. Yeah, he's going to have a little more cushion because Rajay Davis isn't there anymore, but Brantley's back, which eats up a spot. And I know Brantley's not going to play center field, especially with the injuries, but again, Zimmer, Abraham Almonte can be a short-term gap if they want to play the game with Zimmer and the service time game there. So he's not a sure thing anymore. He's not a sure thing by any means. So draft with caution. Yes, there is a little bit of upside, but he's not doing what he did last year. I'll bet my house on it.
Man, I want Brantley to be good. Between 2014 and 2015, he had the 12th highest WRC plus in all of baseball. But right now he's going 46 outfielder off the board.
Yeah, I can't touch that.
Keon Broxton and Jock Peterson. And
I love Keon Broxton. So.
Well, yeah, me too. I was just going to say I don't disagree with it at all. But Brantley burned me last year, so I am hands off. But, you know, I could see where other people might think about buying in.
This not to go on a like Michael Brantley rant. This isn't Brantley-centered or centric or anything. But you remember how – in this time last year, they're like, oh, he's going to miss, like, he could be ready for opening day. Remember all that? And
yep.
How'd that turn out?
It turned out with me drafting him, like, 95th overall in some drafts and hating my life all summer.
On my rankings last year, I was the only guy on our FWFB team to have him offside the top 300 players. Just because the number one predictor of injuries is what? Injuries.
previous injury, yeah.
Yeah, and if he's somebody who's already hurt, I'm not taking a shot at him, especially in the outfield position. Everyone thinks outfield is deep. It's not this year.
Nope.
It's very thin. And if you are going to take a chance on Brantley, you have to back it up with at least one other guy, like, right away. You know what I mean? Just because the other hitter was there. And even before he was hurt, I mean, do we really know what kind of hitter he is? He had 20 home runs in 2014. 2015, his last healthy year, he had 15. 2013, he had 10. Okay, those aren't great. 45 doubles in 14 and 15, those are really nice. That could grow into more power. The batting average of 310, 327. Okay, so he's been more steady than I, you know, maybe than I remember, because I'm probably used to his just being unproductive and hurt. So I do take that back. He has been more productive than what I remember. But is he going to steal 23 bases again?
No.
Yeah, and that's a lot of his value right there, right? Because, I mean, he's not going to hit for premium power. He might go 15-15 again with 280. Which is good value, but I mean, it's so such uncertainty that I need to back him up right away if I take him.
Yeah, and the thing is coming off of a the shoulder surgery and everything like that, that saps power in ways that we just don't know once he gets back on the field.
Definitely don't. Yeah, he's a guy to watch in spring training, but unfortunately, spring training is too late for a lot of the leagues we all play in.
Mm.
So we'll have to wait and see. But I'm going to be out on Brantley for this year for sure.
Yeah, most definitely. Lonnie Chisenhall, you have
hard pass.
Hard platoon option in a AL league with daily moves.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked they didn't go get Joey Batts just because Chisenhall is – I guess they like his defense in right field, playoffs be damned, because he was, again, bad out there too. He's just an inspiring option, no upside, just blah.
Yeah. It's like the bear, you know. I don't have to outrun the bear, I just have to outrun you. I just have to play better defense than Tyler Naquin, and nobody will, you know, say anything about it for Lonnie Chisenhall.
Yep, bat ninth and not hit below 200 and hit your weight.
Mm-hmm.
Hit 12 to 15 or hit 10 to 12 homers and nobody will say anything about you.
Absolutely. Any other bats that you want to hit before we move on to the rotation?
No, I think that'll cover it. It's a deep team offensively, which is interesting. It's different to hear. It's nice to see the Indians handing out the highest contract they've ever handed out to anyone with Encarnacion. That will get broken pretty soon as Lindor and all these pitchers hit free agency, but that'll happen later.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, let's start at the top with Mr. Corey Kluber. I don't know if there's a ton that you can say about Kluber. He's been a mirror image of what he's been his entire career. Tell me what you like about Corey Kluber.
Everything. He's solid, strikeouts, limits hits, puts the ball in the ballpark, doesn't walk guys. I guess the one thing I'm going to spin to you is, are you worried about the postseason run? How many innings he put on his arm?
No, I mean, he's been a, you know, decent workhorse. I got to bring up his page to take a look at his inning totals, but he's you know, had a fairly, you know, decent workload. I think he can hold up, and people might get, you know, if you pair that with the pretty much the only stat that I pulled on Kluber, because, I mean, he's just awesome. What else is there to say?
Yeah.
He struggles in the first couple months, and then he struggles in September. So if he comes out and he throws a, you know, 4.5 ERA in April, and people start getting worried and they say, oh, I don't know, you know, the playoff mileage, blah, 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 buy in.
I'm with you.
Yeah. It's definitely one of the opportunities that I'm going to be looking at most this year.
Another thing to look to is he's going to have a full year of Andrew Miller behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you don't ride him as hard because you can go to that good bullpen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I was reading he was tied for like third in the majors with innings of 8 or more innings pitched. So, yeah, I mean, he definitely went deep in the games.
He's definitely an ace. I mean, if you would have asked me this last year, I would have said he's probably a high-end number two, but he's definitely 100% ace, like no doubt about it.
Yeah. Another one of the guys that I absolutely love on the staff is Carlos Carrasco, and he was a guy that was catching a lot of helium last year. Do you think the price is going to regress enough for you to get in, or is he still going too high?
See, he's the guy that's going too high. I think Kluber's going maybe a spot too low. Kluber and Chris Sale and all them guys, I guess that's whether you want a Porsche or a Ferrari, right? But with Carrasco, I mean, you're paying Porsche and Ferrari prices, but you might only be getting, like, I don't know, what's an average car? I'm not a car guy, but this analogy was sounding good in my head, but now I don't know what to say. But,
like a Chevy Impala?
Yeah, that's what you're getting, but you're paying for a Camaro.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the price tag is too high. You're paying borderline ace prices. He's going... I have him as my 15th starter, which admittedly is too high, so that's going to change for me. He's going to be coming down. But, I mean, you look at the NFBC data, Carrasco is going number 15, so he's that's right in the sweet spot. And if you're – I played a lot of 15-team leagues. That's the number one starter, and that's not him. He's been hurt too much in his career to have that title. I was getting a lot of – in our Friends with Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League, I ended up swinging a trade. I hate saying it like this. I mean, I have a hole in my pitching staff to fill with the passing of Jose Fernandez. Rest in peace. So I was looking for a starting pitcher. This guy had John Lester, and I was targeting Lester. He kept countering every offer I made for Lester with Carrasco, and I wasn't having it. I want Lester in deeper leagues because, you know, he's a guy that's going to be durable and give you innings. The innings totals for Carrasco in the last 4 years, ready?
Yep.
46.2 innings in 2013. 2014 in the majors, 134 innings. And 2015 in the majors, 183. That's the high watermark by far. Last year, 146.1. Why are we paying the price as the number 15 starting pitcher overall? That's baffling to me. The stuff is there. The upside is there. I'm going to let someone else gamble. I'll take one of the plethora of other solid options right around him later.
Yeah, in all fairness, 2014, he was doing work out of the bullpen, so that kind of cut back his numbers.
Yeah.
I just wanted to point that out. But what are we paying for? We're paying for a very good strikeout percentage that he went down from 29% to 25%. Cry me a river. He's still fantastic. Walks per nine right above two. He had issues with the home run. I mean, he came back great from the hamstring injury and he had this weird hand thing. He gave up a lot of hard contact last year, but there's a lot that I absolutely love about Carrasco, and I'm just not rational on him, but I do believe he's going a little too high.
Yeah, are you worried about, the injuries all the time? And they're kind of weird ones, too. Like, last year he strained his hamstring on a play covering first base. It looked pretty bad. Like,
yeah,
Looked like a knee injury at the time because of the way he went down.
Uh-huh. He had to be carted off, didn't he? Or
yeah,
like,
something
carried
like
him off. Or?
Carried him off, yeah. He was like, limping, hopping on one foot with his, two guys carrying him off. Yeah, something like that. Broke his pinky. I know these are fluky things, but at what point do fluky things stop becoming fluky? You know what I mean? The soft tissue injuries and stuff like that. I do think he's number one starter upside. I'm just not going to pay the price for someone that hasn't done it before.
Yeah.
The biggest part of being a number one is being able to suck 200 innings out of you, and I don't see him doing that. If he does, I'll tip my hat and I will say, hey, I missed out, but I'm also going to grab somebody else that's comparable for less price, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm much more.
You're higher than me, but
yeah, I'm in, but I'm much higher at like the 70 range as opposed to like the 45 range. Let's put it that way.
So NFBC average draft total right now is 59.9. So yep. That's a little high.
Yeah. Another guy that, I mean, I won bets with Trevor Bauer last year. I had a bet where I put him up against Carlos Rodon in 5x5 categories, and that's the last time I ever want to put any, stake either in my reputation or in my dollars on Trevor Bauer. Because he was in the bullpen to start the season, which was kind of maddening. I'm still not exactly 100% sure what was going on there.
Cody Anderson, man.
Yeah. We saw how that went.
Yeah.
a career low walk percentage for Trevor Bauer, and it was still 8.6%. Like, why would anybody draft Trevor Bauer? You tell me.
I won't draft him. It seems like a headache to own, to be honest. He's gonna have a lot of those seven inning starts where he gives up 3-4 runs, which you'll take, and then he's also gonna have a lot of those five inning six earned with eight strikeouts but five walks. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You don't want that. Too many crooked numbers in the box score, especially in the walks column. But I'm not a Bauer guy. Never have been. He seems like an incredibly difficult person to deal with on a day-to-day basis, but that's outside the fantasy realm.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure people will say that about other people too, like probably like even like me, but it is what it is. I don't see the upside. I think he walks too many guys. The strikeouts trended in the wrong direction. So I'll let someone else take Bauer.
Absolutely. Alarming decline in his left on base rate. And about the only real silver lining I could pull out of his numbers was a decreased Z percentage, which is contact made on pitches swung at in the zone. So he was finding a little luck there. But no thank you on Trevor Bauer.
How do you think – I mean, I always wonder. Do you think the Indians win the World Series with a healthy Carrasco and Salazar in the rotation instead of Bauer and Tomlin having to start – three games?
The human home run machine that is Josh Tomlin? Yeah.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
Can we just agree that that's the last we'll talk of Josh Tomlin this podcast?
Yeah, elite command, elite control. Oh. But when you have no other stuff to go with it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that was way further than I was going with it, too. But, hey, yeah.
You might be listening. Never know.
I do believe that Carrasco and Salazar make this, a much better run for him.
Yeah, what's your initial thoughts on Danny Salazar? I mean, he's kind of similar with the injury risks, and he's like Trevor Bauer and Carlos Carrasco morphed into one player.
Yeah.
And what do you feel about him going forward?
Well, I did Bauer behind Carrasco because I've been working on like the if you've ever heard of the compliment sandwich, or like when you're criticizing somebody, you give them the good thing and then you lay out all the bad shit.
Give them the neg and then throw two positives at him.
Give them a positive and then you neg them to death and then you give them a positive afterwards. Like,
I used to watch some crappy show on like VH1. It was like Mystery. You ever seen that guy? Like the pickup artist or something like that?
Yeah.
He had that philosophy. So this is funny you brought that up. I don't know why it went this way with it, but that's what I remember.
But I mean, Salazar, there's a lot that I like, even though his walk rate made Bauer look somewhat normal. Danny was dealing with a number of ailments himself. He sets the batters up well with that 95-mile-an-hour fastball, and then he chucks that changeup up there, and they've got no shot. But if his fastball is going to keep getting tagged for 280 batting averages, he's going to need to keep developing these other offerings, and they're going to need to stay as elite as they have been.
Isn't it weird to think opponents could hit 280 off a 95-mile-an-hour fastball?
Yeah. I thought that was a little high, and maybe there is a bit of regression coming there. Like, if you just sit there and think about it. But, I mean, it could happen. He was also struggling to get into favorable counts. His first strike percentage was a career low, right around 54%.
Yeah, that's bad.
And the lineup flipping problems reared their heads again. He had kind of ironed them out a little bit, and especially if he can keep up this 48% ground ball rate, it's definitely something I'm interested in Salazar. But I see where you're talking about, like the Carrasco nagging injuries and
Bauer wildness.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and the Carrasco stuff, like, it's good. The stuff is elite. But I mean, do you think? I mean, he's going as the number 30th starter off the board, 134.5 NFBC average draft data. I think that's a little high. I had him, well, I guess not. I have him as my 28th starter off the board.
Yeah, so, I was going to say, that's a good range. I mean, I'm just looking at the names right around him. I'm completely out on Matt Harvey as far as injury, if you want to talk injury risk, and Rich Hill for that matter.
I love Rich Hill, and I like Alex Reyes behind him too. Tanner Roark. I'd rather have Salazar over Roark, I think. I'll take Michael Fulmer over Salazar, though.
Yeah.
There's a couple of guys after him.
Yeah.
So, I need to redo my pitching rankings because I don't agree with them as I'm looking at my own rankings, but that'll change.
Absolutely. one more name I want to throw out there, because I had seen some rankings where he was insanely low, but Jameson Taillon, where would you see him and Danny Salazar?
Let me find Taillon first. I have Taillon one spot behind him. Really, you brought that up.
So. Wow. He's like eight spots behind in NFBC, and I think it was Tristan Cockcroft's rankings, but he had him outside the top 200, I want to say.
Yeah, that's nuts. That's crazy. Look at the profile for Taillon. Tell me one thing you don't like besides the youth.
I love it.
It's ground ball, strikeouts. The walks are manageable. The strikeouts are insane. Like I said, the ground balls are good. The Pirates is a good organization. Sky's the limit for Taillon, really.
We'll bring it out back to the Indians, even though I don't think there's any more arms here in the rotation or possibly that could crack the rotation. But let's talk bullpen, because I want to talk Andrew Miller.
See, I don't know what to do with this guy, man, in redraft leagues. I know he's going to have value. He is.
Yep.
When do you take him, though? Because he's a relief pitcher that's not going to get you the most important stat that relief pitchers get. And yeah, he's going to be a good guy for the ratios. But, like, I can't take a ratio guy that high with no other value, right? I mean, am I insane?
I mean, he struck out
44.7%
in batters last year.
That is insane. So,
real quick, since 2000, only three pitchers have had better seasons in that regard. That was Chapman in 2014, Kimbrel in 2012, and Gagne in 2003. Miller is the only other guy besides Chapman to appear once in the top 10. He's nuts. His NFBC price is a little nuts, personally, if we're going to go there. He's actually going in front of Cody Allen on the sheet where I'm looking at.
I was looking for him, but you're right, he is. Wow.
Yeah, both. So Andrew Miller's high pick is 75. Cody Allen's is 76. So somebody has picked Andrew Miller higher than Cody Allen's ever gone. Also, Andrew Miller's low pick is 147 at the list I'm looking at. Cody Allen's is 164. So Cody Allen has fallen further than Andrew Miller ever has.
I mean, I love, Baseball HQ. It's one of my favorite metric sites. And I know Mike's real big over there. So read his stuff over there. It's always great. They're like little blurbs. I'm not going to spoil it too much, because if you haven't bought Baseball HQ Forecaster, you're missing out. They, in their little blurbs, say Miller can be a $20 reliever even if he doesn't record a single save.
Yeah, it's Dylan Betances all over again. We already had this conversation, didn't we?
Kind of did, yeah.
I mean, last year. I mean, isn't this kind of what we were looking at with, stuck behind Chapman in the bullpen, but in the lead strikeout, not as legendary as Andrew Miller here, but, I mean, it's kind of the same conversation we were having.
Yeah, no, it's not wrong, that's for sure. I mean, I guess, obviously, I think we all understand that Miller is a better pitcher than Cody Allen, right? Like, there's no question?
Yes.
It's just the role. Mm-hmm. And it's admirable that Terry Francona is doing what people have said should be done with managing. Finally, use your best pitcher in your highest leverage spot, no matter what inning it is. It's admirable he's doing that, but he's making it really hard for fantasy. And I bet you in 2-3 years, the normal for fantasy leagues is going to be saves plus holds. I think that's going to be the norm, and just to accommodate for this changing game.
I could definitely see that happening. Another thing that I could see happening is the Cody Allen, continuing this implosion where he keeps giving up tons of home runs and walking 10% of batters. I think Miller's not going to accrue saves, even though he's the better pitcher, but I think they just like to use him in more situations than Cody Allen. But so you're... Gun to your head, do you take Cody Allen or Andrew Miller first in a draft?
Man, that's tough. Probably Miller. And I hate saying that because I don't know what to do with him, but probably Miller.
I'm with you there. And I wonder just how far down the rabbit hole this goes. I mean,
I think the way I look at Miller is I have my grouping of closers. The two tiers above him, the Chapman, Jansen, Britton in their own tier at the top. And then guys like Kimbrel, Melanson, Edwin Diaz, Osuna. I'll put Ken Giles in that, in the second tier. I think Miller heads the third tier for me of relievers, with like O from the Cardinals, and Colomé from the Rays, and Allen from the Indians, and Robertson from the White Sox, Herrera from the Royals. You know what I mean? I think he's in that third tier at the front line of it. Just because you can't bump him so high because he's not going to get the most important stat you have relievers for. But I don't know how many innings he's going to pitch. I mean, obviously he's not going to get ridden as hard as Francona rode him down the stretch. Like, I don't think that's possible.
Yeah.
But it's really, really hard to put value on him. I know this sounds like a cop-out, but I just don't know what else to do with him. I'm still pretty bullish on him. I'd probably rank him 10th-ish on my reliever list.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. It's not wrong. Like, I can't sit here and tell you you're wrong for saying things like that. And I think it's going to be just this absolute conundrum that players are going to have to deal with at their drafts this year.
Yeah, definitely. And I probably won't own him in a lot of places, I'll say that.
Yeah, that was probably going to be the next words out of my mouth as well. Either, and I mean, I don't know. Part of that might be that there's people that believe it just more than I do, even before, you know, I would be willing to buy in. And I'm interested. I'm definitely interested.
Wow, I want to show you something here. Not to get off tangent too much on Andrew Miller, but I want to show you the rankings in Friends of Fantasy Benefits League. This just shows how much that we don't really know what to do with him. Admittedly, mine's low. I'm going to change it. I have him at 21 as far as relievers go. That's not right. I'm going to bump him up probably 8 to 10 spots. So consider that 13. Our boy Mike Warner has him 4th.
Wow.
And that's without having a closer job.
Yeah.
So, and 4th is after, you know, everyone likes the Jansen, Britton, Chapman tier, 1, 2, 3. Everybody has that, 1, 2, 3. You know, different order, but everyone has those guys in that grouping, and he has him 4th. So, and I can't really say he's wrong either.
Nope.
Because it's weird.
I mean, with the strikeouts, you could see him perform like better than a Melanson or Edwin Diaz is the guy that he's baffled me all offseason. But maybe I'll have to hop in that Mariners review and take a deeper look here. But I love Miller. I love Cody Allen. Is there anybody else you like in this bullpen?
Not really. Brian Shaw's a guy. If you're in deep leagues, he can get you some value with the holds, but I'm not. No. I'll just say no.
He's a guy. Yeah, and then we got the Matt Prospect Minute coming out, so people will get a double dose of you. Do you want to, give any teasers for the people who might be listening?
Sure. Zimmer is a guy to know for Cleveland. We touched on him a little bit. Greg Allen is also another outfielder to touch this year who might make some value. But the rest of it, you're just going to have to listen to the Prospect Minute and you'll find out.
And that's the biggest tease I've ever heard, and it definitely
it's a good system.
It is. I like what you did there.
They have a really scrawny righty that I happen to love it dearly. See, I'll just leave it like that. His initials are the same as mine, but in reverse order.
Well, for those of you playing at home, take a minute and decipher that and make sure to check out the podcast and check out Matt trolling on Twitter. Where can they find you, Matt?
It's MDTomp, FWFB, and I get called a troll a lot, but I do not have green hair.
Do you get called troll or douche nozzle more often?
I was called douche nozzle by a guy that's got Hall of Fame votes in his career and that's going to be run for U.S. Senate, so... What are you trying to say?
I'm trying to say that that you're very established and people should give you a follow on Twitter.
I agree with this. Kurt Schilling doesn't like me too much, but that's okay.
Which is completely fine. He probably doesn't like me very much either at EasyEv3. If you want to hit me up with anything other than dick pics, just send it on over. Let's shoot
Damn
the
it.
Shit.
That's my plan for after the podcast. You don't like those.
I got to draw the line somewhere, but okay. I not drawing it anywhere in baseball. Hit me up and let's talk turkey. So for myself, Matt, and the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball offseason.